This episode of Cut the Clutter, I will start with a riddle. And unlike in the past, when I do boo-boos like giving it away in the thumbnail or the headline, now I am taking care not to do so. So tell me, which country are we talking about? If I told you that it's a tiny country, okay, I will tell you it's in the Middle East. But it's so tiny, it is half the size in terms of area of a country that we know to be a very tiny country, that is Israel. So half the area of tiny Israel, where tourists buy t-shirts, they say, the smallest big country in the world. And population, native population, which is about 4% of Israel. If Israel is about 9 million, this country has less than 4 lakhs. Its population, now I'm giving it away a little bit, its population actually is 2.8 million, somewhere between 28 to 29 lakhs, but only 11% of it is native population. The rest are expatriates or immigrants. Now, I've given you some indications about the country. Let me tell you some more. This country is landlocked. Landlocked to the extent that it shares its land border only with one country, one region, but that country and that region has blockaded it. So it is landlocked on that side. It opens out to the sea on one side. Since we talking about the Middle East, let me give one more fact away, that this opens out to the Persian Gulf. Now, that is, I'm sure most of you have figured this out. Then I will tell you some more interesting things about the country. The country is very friendly with Iran. It's very friendly with Iran, so much so that it is even known to fund many of the militant slash terrorist slash Islamist organizations active in the Middle East on the behest of Iran, including Hezbollah, for example. Interesting, isn't it? At the same time, it is also a tiny country where most of US's forces are headquartered in the Middle East. So US Central Command, while its base is in Florida in the US, its operational command is now in this country. The biggest US Air Force base in the region, in this country. The biggest US naval base in the region for the Middle East is at a port next door to this country, not far away. I know you know the country, but let me still keep it at the riddle level, because this is such an interesting little country, little you know, the area and the population. This country also shares an oil field with Iran. It's an island oil field. It's just an island that sits sitting on a pile of oil and gas. More gas than oil, actually essentially gas. How big is this? This is an island or a gas field of 9,700 square kilometers. Remember, this country is only 11,500 square kilometers. So this island is 9,700 square kilometers, of which 6,000 belong to this tiny country, 3,700 belong to Iran. Again, what do these territories hold? In the 6,000 kilometers that this tiny country owns, you find 1,800 trillion cubic feet of gas. On the Iranian side, there is 600 trillion cubic feet of gas. So this tiny country has three times as much gas as Iran. This actually is the biggest gas field in the world. If you Google the largest gas field in the world, you will know the name of South Pars and North Dome. So South Pars is the area that's with Iran, and North Dome is the area that's with the other country that we are talking about. So once again, a big shared economic interest. In fact, besides the gas found there, there is also gas-based sediments, which are about 50 billion barrels. So you can just keep counting, this will not end. A big oil and gas power. It is also the richest country in the world for some time. Its per capita income is more than $1,40,000 a year. It's a lot. I mean, if you compare this with Switzerland, which a lot of people in popular belief think is the richest, it's more than 1.5 times richer than Switzerland on a per capita basis. It is richer than all the other of the richest countries in the world. In fact, even Singapore is only $1,03,000. So it is much richer than all of them. In fact, if you look at its GDP, its GDP, total GDP for a tiny country like that, a country of less than 4 lakh natives, its GDP is $360 billion. You want me to put that in perspective? Okay, so all of Pakistan, population of 230 million people, 23 crore people, has a GDP of $314 billion. This tiny country with less than 4 lakh natives has the GDP of $360 billion. So you can imagine what a big power this country is. And now I'll tell you one or two things that will be a complete giveaway, because this is also a tiny country which does not have much freedom of the press within, but funds a lot of freedom of the press around the world, because it runs big media organization based in itself, which is free to write anything it wants to write for most parts of the world, particularly some things that are irritating to its neighbors, not question its own government very much. That organization is called Al Jazeera. So since I told you I'm giving you some giveaways, let me also mention that this tiny country has also been a patron of art, culture, journalism from around the world. This is also the country where our own M.F. Hussain took refuge when he said he was harassed in India. So he went to this country, which also happens to be tax-free. That's very convenient. Also, this is the country. Now, if you don't get it now, that means you've been sleeping through a lot of things in life. This is also the country that will be hosting the FIFA Football World Cup next year. So we are talking about Qatar. And the reason we are talking about Qatar is that, led by Saudi Arabia, the Gulf countries which had boycotted it, which had blackballed it, which had blockaded it 3 years back, have now lifted the blockade. So as we speak today, as I record today, in fact, the ruler of Qatar is in Saudi Arabia in a place called Al Ula, which is like a resort or like a tiny city where the summit of Gulf countries is taking place. And he was embraced and welcomed by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. So this is really a little Bharat Milap going on within the Gulf countries, because this is the one Gulf country that was at odds with all the others. So before I go ahead, I will tell you what is GCC, Gulf Cooperation Council. This has six countries, that is Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Oman, Kuwait and Qatar. So essentially, five countries had turned on Qatar. Four very aggressively, that is Saudi Arabia, UAE most aggressively, in fact. Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain and Oman. Kuwait a little bit less. And in fact, it's Kuwait's foreign minister who's also played a diplomatic role in bringing about this kind of rapprochement. Now, you see this tiny country with all these games being played around it. So you might imagine that what is this tiny country? This must be a puppet which is being made to play or dance by other people controlling the puppet strings. The fact is to the contrary. This little country is also a big powerhouse in its own right. So there are lots of puppets dancing around it, including Libya, Syria. It's a bit much to call Iran a puppet, but in the sense that it's a player, it is a puppet in the region. And all of them, if they were puppets, their strings are controlled by the ruler of this country, the ruler of Qatar. So the current leader of Qatar is Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, very wise man. Thanis have ruled Qatar since 1850. So they are among the oldest dynasties in the Middle East. Now, his predecessor had taken over in 1995, and among the first things he did after taking over was to set up Al Jazeera, the media network. And that gave Qatar special powers, because it became the only Gulf country, the only Arab country, in fact, the only Islamic country with a big media empire, which carries influence all across the world, particularly in the Western world. So they created a powerhouse to rival the BBC in many ways. That's what Al Jazeera was. And in fact, if I see the list of demands that the other Gulf countries made when they decided to blockade and boycott Qatar in 2017, and I will get into the reasons as to why that happened. The demands were curb diplomatic ties with Iran, sever all ties to terrorist organizations, that is Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, etc., and declare all of these as terrorist groups. Qatar has had connections with all of these. Shut down Al Jazeera and its affiliated stations. Obviously, that is something that I would find most repugnant because it's a fine media organization, should not be shut down. But that was the third demand on the list of Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, etc., that they put forward, of the 13 demands they put forward to Qatar. And then there were demands like shut all the other news outlets that Qatar funds directly and indirectly, immediately terminate all Turkish military presence, stop all funding of individuals who are dissidents or who are called terrorists by Saudi Arabia, UAE, Egypt, Bahrain, US and other countries, and interference in sovereign countries' internal affairs, etc., etc., etc. So the rest are not as material, but that list goes on to say that you pay us reparations for the damage caused by your activities in the past few years, and we will put an audit on you that will work on a monthly basis, and after we've seen good conduct on a quarterly basis, and the amount of reparations we will decide, but in consultation with you. So this was really a surrender document. Qatar refused to surrender. In fact, over the 3 years, from whatever I read, Qatar has emerged stronger than it was. Because what it did was that it leaned on Iran instead, because it was locked off from the land side. But it opens out on the Persian Gulf side. It already has a partnership with Iran on these gas fields. So it began to get all its essential supplies from Iran. Iran became a big trading partner. Iran also became a big strategic and tactical partner. And that led to many complications. How can a tiny country in which US CENTCOM is based, how can a tiny country which is a member of Gulf Cooperation Council led by Saudi Arabia, how can a tiny country with a predominantly Sunni population, small but a Sunni population, be so friendly with Iran? In fact, it became the friendliest Arab country to Iran. You could even say that for this period, it was the only Arab country truly friendly to Iran. And this came to a head. These irritations were building up over time between Qatar and the other Gulf countries. But this really built up in 2017, because what happened in 2017 was that in April 2017, a bunch of Qataris, I think 26 Qataris, were taken hostage in Iraq by insurgents or terrorists linked to Iran. These groups, to which hundreds of millions of ransom was paid out to get these Qatari hostages freed, including Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Council, IRGC, whose boss Qasem Soleimani was recently assassinated by the Americans. Then Hezbollah, which is really an Iran-funded, Iran-led operation in Lebanon against Israel, and Iraq's group called Kataib Hezbollah, which is also a Shia group. So these were all jihadists from the Shia side who were paid off, and the Arab countries were upset about this. So this was the spark in 2017, April. But problem had started in 2016. In 2016, if you go back and jog your memory, Saudis decided to execute a Shia cleric, and the Shia cleric's name was Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr. And that happened in January 2016. When that happened, Gulf countries decided to break all contact with Iran, and that's when they broke diplomatic relations with Iran. Qatar, on the other hand, it joined in but did not break diplomatic relations. It recalled its ambassador. That's a bit like India and Pakistan have recalled their high commissioners, but diplomatic ties continue. So they recalled their ambassador but let diplomatic ties continue, and then also broke from the pact, because 2017 April, after the ransom incident took place that irritated the Arab countries too much, or Gulf countries too much, Trump came to Riyadh in May 2017. And that's when he endorsed the Saudi call of joint action against Iran. Rather than join the Saudi call for joint action against Iran, the Qatari ruler was quoted by his own country's news agency as saying, questioning this anti-Iran sentiment and saying, what is the big deal? Why this anti-Iran sentiment? And also that he called in that same statement Hezbollah a legitimate resistance organization and also called Iran a big power. Now, later the Qataris said that this was the agency's computers were hacked. The Sheikh never said it, but everybody knew that he had said it. And that got the Saudi and UAE rulers' backs up. So they decided in June 2017 on a full-fledged boycott and blockade of Qatar. That has now been lifted. Now, what does this lifting of the blockade mean? Why should we be so bothered? One tiny country has got blockade on it, lifted by its neighbors. What's the big deal? So before we understand what it means to the region and to the world, because this country is the fulcrum of so many games being played in the world right now. Before we understand what does it mean, we have to understand why have they got here now. Because the differences between Qatar and the other countries that boycotted it were very strong. In fact, they began in 2011 when after the Arab Spring in Egypt, there was an election post Hosni Mubarak and a government of the Muslim Brotherhood came in, President Morsi's government. Now, that was a Muslim Brotherhood government. The Saudis and the rest of the Gulfies did not like it because they saw Muslim Brotherhood as a revolutionary Islamist organization that would threaten their regimes. Because if one thing that worries rulers in the Middle East, it's spelled with D. It's called democracy. Because democracy means numbers, the logic of numbers then means that you cannot be controlling everything because you are the custodian of the mosques. Of the holiest of the Muslim mosques, power will then go to whoever gets the most votes. So these countries did not want Muslim Brotherhood, but Qatar, on the other hand, patronized and supported Muslim Brotherhood, and that went on like that until in 2013, in a coup that was supported by Gulf countries, Sisi pulled down the Morsi government. So this antagonism goes back that far. So in spite of that, why were they in such a hurry? So I can tell you, you know cricket, you've seen a very familiar scene in cricket when a batsman is taking a cheeky single, where a batsman is sort of running short for his second run and he sees the ball coming into the wicketkeeper's gloves and he knows that he might be short by an inch or maybe a micro inch or a micro centimeter because the line belongs to the umpire. So what does the batsman do? The batsman dives. The batsman throws himself to beat the wicketkeeper or beat the ball hitting the stumps. That's exactly what happened now in the Gulf. Because the ball that's about to reach the wicketkeeper's gloves is Joe Biden. Because it is now just about 2 weeks for him to take over as president. And as that happens, the Saudis know that a lot of the freedom of action that they had under Trump will now go away. That's one. That is in terms of freedom of action for Mohammed bin Salman and the rest. Also, the war they are running in Yemen. Once again, they're fighting that war in Yemen where Qatar is participating with them as an ally. It's all very messed up. Don't get me started on all these other issues. So the other thing they worry about is, one, they know that Biden may want the war in Yemen to end. Two, Biden may want MBS to clean up his act, and there will be questions about Jamal Khashoggi's assassination. At least nobody will say it doesn't matter anymore. Nobody in the new US administration. But most importantly, this new US administration will reach out to Iran, resume negotiations, and it's committed already to bringing back JCPOA, that is the Iran nuclear deal. That deal Qatar is a supporter of. And given how close Qatar is to Iran, a Biden administration will now have stakes or interest in Qatar helping with that process. So before that happened, and while Trump was still here, that ball was still about to reach the wicketkeeper's gloves. That means Biden was still about to come into power, that Mohammed bin Salman and other Gulf countries have reached, have crossed the crease, so at least they feel safe. Why has Qatar done it? Obviously, if you are boycotted and blockaded by all your neighbors, you want to be legitimized. Also, it is living in too many contradictions. Just think about it. It has the biggest US Air Force base in Qatar, the Al Udeid Air Base, but the biggest US naval base is next door in Bahrain, in Manama. So it's all a messed up situation. Plus, the tightrope it's walking between Israel, between Iran and Saudi Arabia and the Americans and everybody, and also the wars that it has willingly got involved in Syria and also in Libya. In Libya, in fact, it is a partner with Turkey. So in Libya, for example, it is supporting the Government of National Accord, GNA, which is recognized by the UN, and there it's partners with Turkey. But there is a complication. The complication is that that government or the coalition that's running that government also includes as one of its integral members or central members something called Justice and Construction Party, which is another face or another name of Muslim Brotherhood, which gets the Gulf countries and the Americans very upset. Similarly, in Syria, it's in partnership with Saudi Arabia in backing those militants who are fighting Bashar al-Assad. And these groups also include some Al-Qaeda affiliates. So for Qatar, it's important now to come back to the mainstream, because it is living very dangerously in a very dangerous neighborhood. So that is why the big changes come about. And with this happening, the chances of a rapprochement between the US and Iran have brightened. With this, the chances of peace in Yemen have brightened. With this, the chances that you might have some end or possibility of an end to the endless wars in Syria and Libya, also those prospects have brightened. So overall, this is a positive change. And if you really ask me, as a sports lover, I would say there is a sporting angle to this hurry for this rapprochement as well. And that urgency might have come from Qatar, because you know what? Qatar is going to be hosting the Football World Cup next year. Now, Qatar has a big sports channel. Qatar is a big media power. So they have a big range of sports channels called BIN, B-N-E, small letters, and I-N-N in large letters. Now, these channels used to beam all the sports coverage from around the world to the Arab world, to the Gulf countries. When the Gulf countries boycotted Qatar, they also blocked off this channel. Now, it was one thing to block off this channel, but another mysterious channel came up, and the Qataris think it's based in Saudi Arabia, called Be Out Q. Be Out Q, I can translate this as go to hell Qatar, right? Or, you know, get the hell or get the hell out of here Qatar. So this is a 10 channel platform which seems to be picking up or stealing all the signal from the Qatari channel, whereby it becomes irrelevant. Now, Qatar has gone into complaints, into appeals. Al Jazeera has done investigations. One of those investigations has also traced that people who are accused of having run this piracy network out of Saudi Arabia are linked to a very important operative of the Saudi Secret Service who was in MBS's security detail and has also been named in Jamal Khashoggi assassination. His name is Maher Mutrib. So all that complication is going on. And it is expected now that with this peace or this rapprochement, sporting hostility will also stop. And you know what? A little twist in the tail. Even the Saudis might be interested in this, because a lot of these sheikhs want to own big sporting clubs. So UAE, as we know, owns Manchester City already. So how can these Saudi sheikhs be left behind? So they want to buy up Newcastle United for a little over £300 million. That is more than 3,000 crore rupees. But for that to happen, they have to become legit. They can't be stealing the signals of the leading sports channel of the country that is going to host the next FIFA World Cup and still expect to be able to buy Newcastle United. So ultimately in life, it all boils down to sport, cricket or football.